Welcome to Talking Book Publishing with Kathleen Kaiser, brought to you by Writers and Publishers Network.
Hello, and welcome to Talking Book Publishing. I'm Kathleen Kaiser, your host. And today we have a great guest, Gwendolyn Van Dron, who is a writer, very talented writer. He does multiple genres, is really well known and won an Edgar for her YA series, and also has done a book about writing and a life. And she has a really interesting story because she started out as a teacher and she never saw herself as a writer, but writer pulled her through a hard time. And she now has makes a full-time living as an author and just came off of a book tour. So welcome.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I'm happy to be here.
Well, we're happy to have you. First off, you're one of the first authors I've talked to who's been on a book tour. So, you know, now that, it, you know, with COVID passing, tell us about it.
Wow. Well, pre-COVID, when the publisher sponsored my book tours, I've been on several that were put together by Random House, and they're very exhausting, but you fly into a city, there's a car that picks you up, they take you to the bookstore, you do an event, maybe two events, maybe an interview, and then you're on a plane and you go to the next city. So you don't spend a whole lot of time in any one place, and you might go to five or seven cities and over the course of maybe 2 weeks. So there's that model. And then my husband, who's also a writer, he and I decided we wanted to see the middle of the country, or see those bookstores in the middle of the country that never got to see authors. So we put together this big he said, she said book tour, where basically he and I would go and talk about what it was like to share an office, and you try to inspire people to do more reading and to write if they wanted to write. And so we got our van wrapped in all the different book covers, and off we went. And we were gone for, oh my goodness, was it 6 weeks?
16.
It was 16 weeks total. We did 8 weeks in the lower part of the country, a loop in the lower part of the country, and then 8 weeks in the northern part of the country. And that was amazing, but it was also exhausting. But we got to see a lot of the smaller stores. And with this tour that I've just come off of for my latest YA novel, The Peach Rebellion, the book is set in Northern and Central California. And so because of COVID, and because there's that kind of, we're in that gray period of places not knowing whether they want to host public events or, so I set that up myself, because my publisher wasn't in a place where they were comfortable putting together a tour yet. So I set it up myself, and it was 13 days, 19 bookstores, 9 schools, and I came home and slept for a week. but I got to drive everywhere. So I didn't have to take any flights. And my husband was my co-pilot, and so he got me to the Greek on time. It was very intense, but it was a schedule that I set up for myself. And I know this is a really long answer, but touring can be, it can be any model of things. You can put it together yourself if you are fortunate enough to be someone that the publisher chooses to send out on tour. That can feel swanky because, you know, they pick you up in the town car, but it's also very exhausting. And so it's work. It feels like a book tour would be sort of a celebrity sort of thing to go do, but it's work.
Well, that's one thing I think a lot of people don't understand. Going out, because I was in the music business, and going out when a band, not only are they performing, they've got to do radio, they got to do interviews, they got to do all that. It's a lot of work. It's not, easy to do.
That whole thing, if it's Tuesday, it must be Topeka or something. It does feel like that. It's like, where are we today? And oh my gosh, did I really schedule all of that for today? Or you can, like, your publisher will put you up in a really nice hotel room, like in the heart of Chicago, and there's this beautiful views, and they send you a bottle of wine, and like, I can't drink the wine. I got to be up at 6 a.m. to catch my flight to go to somewhere else, you know, and I've come in too late at night. So it's not like you can really avail yourself of all the perks of being on a publisher sponsored book tour. It's work. And you think you're going to have time to do some sightseeing, and you think you're going to have time to, you know, enjoy something here or there, but pretty much you're tired and just recovering so that you're on for the next day.
Now, with the Peach Rebellion, that's kind of a historical fiction, right?
Yeah, no kind of about it.
Okay.
Yeah. And that was a different beast for me, because I have over 30 books. None of them have been historical fiction up to this point. And so this was 3 years of research and writing and revision and just trying to get it all right, because setting your story in an era that you didn't live through and aren't, like, you don't know the little nuances of having been in that period of time. You do want to get it all right. And which takes, here we use that word again, work.
Well, writing is work. And if I know some people approach it like a hobby, and it's like, they just don't understand what the commitment is. Publishing is a business, you know?
Yes. And I think that there's the love that some of us have for writing. And we need to balance that with the practicality of that it is a creative endeavor, but it's also a business. And so you have to address both. You have to make the time to do the creative thing, and then you have to put that aside and then attend to the business aspect of it, because especially now there is so much that falls on the author to do for promoting your book and for getting the word out about it, and to help it find its audience. I would rather write all day than do any of that. I love going places where people will come up to me and tell me how much a book of mine meant to them, or they've come because they're a fan of my work. I love that, you know, the whole you get the positive reinforcement for the work that you do. But that is that you have to do the work first. Mm-hmm. You have to do the work. And that means you have to commit the time to actually putting words on the page.
Right. Do you have a schedule that you write by?
Well, when I had a full-time job and two little kids, I got up at 5:30 in the morning and I wrote for an hour before I went to work. And then I would write like for an hour at the end of the day, or revise actually. And then when my kids got older and I became a full-time writer, I would write during the time that they were at school. And then I would do the other things around it. So that was my job while they were at school. And now that my kids are grown and out of the house and I can write whenever I want, I find myself less productive.
Oh, really?
Yes, because I don't have those necessary deadlines in each day. It's like, oh, I could have, you know, another cup of tea before I start writing. So you can become lazy when you have all the time in the day. And then you realize, well, that day went by and you didn't really put in your words. And so you have to, so I find for myself that I need to be disciplined about it. And I need to say, today, I'm going to stay in bed with my laptop and I'm going to write all day, you know, that kind of thing. And the internet is also very distracting. And so I have to discipline myself away from, you know, clicking here or there. It's just like, I have to get my mind in my story and not get distracted from it. So it does take discipline. And sometimes that discipline is externally imposed upon you by your family and your job and your other things. And sometimes it's you need to take that up yourself and discipline yourself.
Okay, so you've worked on your discipline. You do it a little bit different, it sounds like, day to day, depending on what's happening. But you put out a lot of books over the years. Do you also spend time on social media? Do you set aside time for that?
Well, I am on a variety of platforms, and I'm glad I am, but I do not spend a whole bunch of time posting about things, because I found that the more I post and the more I put out there, the more it takes away from my actual writing time. And I do think that it is something that writers should be. They should be on social platforms. So partly because there are other people doing the same thing you are. And if they're a positive influence, there's a lot of griping that goes on in the industry, but if they're a positive influence, then you can benefit from it. But if you find that what you're reading is all like disgruntled stuff or negative things about, you know, how hard it is to be a writer, how hard it is to break into the industry, and it discourages you, then you should probably avoid it.
Right. I agree. I agree with that completely, because there's nothing will stop you from writing faster than a negative influence. You know,
it's true. And I always say nothing makes you feel worse quicker than Facebook. It's like, well, all your friends went and did whatever it is they did and you didn't, you know, that kind of just metaphorical for the whole thing, or somebody just won a big award and they didn't even consider me. You know, it's just like nothing can make you feel bad quicker than the social media platform here.
So let's get back to the Peach Rebellion, because I think that's a really interesting story, because it is something that happened. It took place in California's Central Valley and up in Northern California a bit. Did you go to those locations during your researching?
So, yes, but let me clarify in case your listeners are a little confused. It is a novel, so it is not a story that actually happened. It's historical and it is fiction. But to answer your question, yes, yes, I went, and actually the book launch for the Peach Rebellion was held at this tiny historical museum in Riverbank, California, the Riverbank Historical Museum. And because the women at this museum, which is open 2 hours a week, were really so great in helping me when I was first starting out. My mother-in-law lived in that area, and I started on this story as a way to get to know her better, because she had worked at cutting sheds when she was a kid. And I knew that it was really hard, and I wanted just to kind of more feel what her life had been like as a teen, because really I only knew about her from the time I met my husband. And then it was all about, you know, things moving forward. So anyway, the ladies at the Riverbank Historical Museum were so helpful. And so we did a fundraiser for the museum to put a spotlight on them and to show like the importance of the work they do in preserving history and how helpful they had been in, you know, this book, which is set in a fictionalized riverbank. So it's instead of Riverbank, it's Ferrybank. Instead of Oakdale, which is right next door and where my mother-in-law grew up, it's Oakvale. And Modesto, which is the neighboring big city, is Modesto. So I didn't change that at all. So that was the launch, and they were super helpful. A peach farmer that lives in the valley was super kind and let me come, and he spent a lot of time with me. And he answered a whole bunch of questions about farming, because I don't grow things real well. So I needed his help for how to do that right. And he let me drive his tractor, which I ground into the mud. So, you know, yes, I definitely did the hands-on experience with the research. But I find that is like one of the perks of being an author, is that you're continually learning about things that maybe you didn't expect to ever want to learn about, but suddenly, because your story needs it, it's fascinating to you and you really pay attention and you kind of learn all about something that turns out to be very important or very fascinating anyway.
Yes, it does. I think a lot of people, even if it's fiction that they're writing, not historical fiction, but just regular fiction, if they're using a real location, they can't just do Google Maps and look at it that way and walk down a street with a little man, you know, on Google Maps and say, oh, I know what this looks like. You don't understand what the air is like. You don't understand all the things Google Maps can't show you.
Right. The other senses.
Yes. Right.
So, absolutely.
And that there's a whole huge range of mountains over here, but from where you're at, it looks flat. You know, yeah. You sort of miss that. Yeah, it's an interesting thing. I've talked to some people who've done that. And it's like, when I went there, it was like, oh my God, this is a lot different than I pictured. Right. And, you know.
Which is why I keep saying, okay, 36 books now. My books are set like, I have a book about a homeless girl. I have a book, that 18 books in the Sammy Keyes series, they take place in a seedy part of town. I've got all these books that take, and now I've done, you know, the Depression and the Dust Bowl in Central California. I'm like, one of these days, I'm going to set a book like in Paris so that I can actually go there, because I keep doing these just kind of, yeah. So.
So who's going to Paris?
I don't see it happening anytime soon, but I've been threatening that for probably 15 years. I've got to set a book in somewhere, you know, that's really great to visit.
Right. Now let's go back around, because I was reading on your bio and that you started writing. You had been a teacher, you were what, computer and math and stuff like that. Yeah. You were teaching. And so you weren't in the English department. You weren't a writing teacher, but you started working through some situation that you found writing therapeutic, and it put you on this path. Can you tell us a little about that?
Well, so yeah. No, I was not going to be a writer. I know probably the majority of your audience is smarter than I was about writing, because I'm sort of hyper. I like to be outside. I'm very active. And writing was that class in school where, you know, you have to sit down and you can't, well, you know, you have to sit down for all of them, I know, but there's no guarantee that you're going to get a good grade. There's the hope, you know, you do the assignment, you do it the best you can, you turn it in, but it always comes back with like ways you need to correct and repair and rearrange and stop using so many exclamation points. And it was just like math was reliable. I could do a math paper and just, I could ace it. Whereas language arts was that wild card. And I felt like the teachers were there to torture me. I didn't understand what they wanted. All this talk about a theme, who cares? You know, I was just not writer material. And then, you know, life happens. And so I grew up and bad stuff happened in my family and I didn't know how to deal with it. And so really I started writing because I needed therapy, and I discovered that I could take the bad guys in my life, fictionalize what had happened, come up with a new ending, like what could happen in the future if I caught these bad guys, and just like generate this whole, I know, it's kind of an endorphin rush to take real bad guys from your real life and then fictionalize their capture and demise. And so I became a writer kind of because I needed therapy, and because it's a place where you can build a world that you can create a happy outcome. Right. If that's your thing, which is my thing, I don't need to read about something where I feel like life's just terrible and then you die. I don't need to read that stuff. I want to feel uplifted. I want to feel like there's hope. And so creating a world where in the end, you know, you can create that feeling of hope and then have somebody read that and come away with a feeling of hope. That's what's important to me. That's about mending things rather than kind of, you know, putting the nails in the coffin of life.
Now, I was reading your Sammy Keyes. You said there's 18, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And you won an Edgar for that, right? For the series?
Yeah.
Yes. It's like the new Nancy Drew. And that caught me because I, you know, grew up on Nancy Drew. I think most girls, if you read, you read Nancy Drew. And that what you're saying is the same type of thing. There's always was a positive ending. you weren't sure where it was going and you were really worried about her, but then there was a positive ending. And I like that point of view, and updating it to a more modern time is perfect.
Yeah. And I think it came from being a teacher and seeing that Nancy Drew was still a thing and realizing that, you know, Nancy gets caught in a thunderstorm and then she goes home and she irons her white cotton shirt. And none of the kids in my class wore a white cotton shirt, and I don't think any of them knew how to operate an iron. So I was thinking, if you could take one of these plucky kids from my classroom and put them in real, like, present day situations that were dangerous and gritty, but also, you know, part of growing up. So just like the things that you face when you're coming into your own as a teen and growing up and figuring out what's right and what's wrong, and just the influences that come at you, and can you resist them, and how do you stand up for yourself and your friends, and all these just kind of internal strength building attributes. So because I feel like characters can be your friends, like books can be your friends. And if you are someone who reads about a character who isn't perfect and who does struggle, and then who manages to stick to her moral compass or to side with doing the right thing as opposed to the easy thing, I think that can build inside the reader a sense of strength themselves. And so, I mean, as a teacher, that kind of was my goal, is to let me give you a character you can relate to, who's going through things like you're going through, who then makes the, you know, kind of makes mistakes, but then winds up being an individual, like somebody who is different from the rest, but that other people then realize is very special in her own, like, unique way, as opposed to ostracizing her. Like, at the beginning of the series, she's ostracized, but and she grows up a month at a time from book to book. So there's an overarching story to the 18 book series. But by the time we get to the end of it, we see what her determination and just her courage has done to kind of mold her community and bring them more courage themselves.
Oh, that's a great theme. That's a wonderful thing to inspire people. I think that has changed so much over the last 30 years with younger women. They're much stronger and a little bit bolder, you know, some. Then there's the other ones, especially the ones that sort of fall prey to social media, that have developed other problems that, yeah, you know, when I was a kid, you know, we didn't have any of this stuff. We had three channels on the TV, for God's sake, you know, and we thought that was cool.
But we had 17 magazine, and we had,
yeah, that's true,
magazines you would look at, and just what it meant to be a beautiful girl, you know, and how important it was to be a beautiful girl, and Barbies and all that stuff influencing us and making us feel less than. And, mm-hmm, and so it's, I don't know if it's because my mom wouldn't let me have a Barbie. I never really wanted any dolls of any kind. I wanted to go out and play, you know, with the neighborhood ruffians. But she's an immigrant. She and my dad were immigrated from the Netherlands after World War II. And she had a different sensibility about her than the other people in our suburban neighborhood. And so clothes were not, I wore my brother's hand-me-downs, you know, clothes were not important. Good grades in school were important. And being, you know, being a hard worker, those were important things. But for the rest of it, it's, you know, she didn't buy in. She thought Barbies were ridiculous. She was not going to get me a Barbie ever. You know, makeup was not something that was going to be worn. You know, she was very much about build your character and, you know, don't paint over your character.
Yeah, that's really good advice. She had a nice, strong mom there. I grew up with a strong mother and her three sisters, who were all very influential in my life. They all had small businesses and did things. And it gives you a different sort of look at life than you're just going to be home and be a mother. You know, I saw they went out and my one aunt was an insurance investigator, you know, and it was, you know, romantic and great to me. I thought it was very glamorous, you know, and she read Vogue and Harper's Bazaar and all that, where my mom didn't, but it gave me a different taste of life. And I think those kind of influences when you're 5, 6, 7 years old, even, are really important in developing a strong character.
Yeah, it's like the formative years stick with you. I mean, we think about the hurts we hold on to. They're based in our childhood. They're based in, you know, before we become an adult. And so I've always seen middle school as that place where kids break away. You know, they break away from their childhood and they become their own people. And that's why I set the Sammy Key series in middle school, because I feel like you can still influence kids at that age, but they're coming into their own. They're starting to think on their own. They're starting to act on their own. They're starting to act out on their own. But that's a really pivotal age. And if you can find ways to infuse them with an internal strength at that age, that will serve them well throughout their lives.
Yeah, give them a solid foundation that they always know they hold inside themselves. That, like you said, a moral compass.
Right.
Yeah, that type of thing. So you also have written other types of books. Tell us about that.
I'm just a maniac. I don't know. I know. I'm sort of. It seems eclectic, but it's not. At the core of all that I write is about building your internal strength. So I've got the young adult books that will, like The Running Dream and Wild Bird. They're all about, and Flipped, they're all about building internal strength. And the Sammy Keys, everything that I write is about that. But so I have a 4-book series for younger readers called the Shredder Man series, about a boy who's bullied in elementary school and kind of how he addresses that. So that's a fun 4-book series for kids that are starting to be independent readers. And then the spin-off series from that was the Gecko and Sticky. So there's 4 books in that. And there's the 18 books in the Sammy Key series. I think I have 7 or 8 standalone titles. A book on writing, because it's called Hope in the Mail: Reflections on Writing and Life. So Hope in the Mail is I wrote because when you're a children's or a teen book author, the way you piece together your living is you go to school visits. And so I would tell, I like to entertain the kids instead of just droning on about being an author. I like to show them where ideas come from through an entertaining story, or give them some, again, putting in the internal strengths things, because, you know, I have a struggle that I can talk to kids who are struggling about and just let them believe in themselves and that life can be better. So I tell these stories, and then the teachers would ask me, because a lot of teachers, most adults have a story, have a book in them somewhere that they want to write. And how do you make the time? How did you do that with a full-time job and 2 little kids? You know, it's, I feel like that the route that I took, because I don't, you know, didn't go to school and get an MFA and do all the traditional routing you might take if you wanted to be a novelist, because I was just an average working mom. How did you manage to do that? And so I put together this book, which is Hope in the Mail. And it's ostensibly it's suitable for kids 7th grade and up, but actually for me, it's my Valentine to people like I was, who dream about writing their book or feel a little lost in the process. And it's my hope that it'll help inspire them and also guide them. There's a section in there on publishing and just the basics of things that I wish that I had known more about when I was in the process of getting rejected for 10 years.
because that seems to be a concurrent theme with a lot of writers.
Well, it is. And I think we need to keep each other going, which is part of my mission. It's like, I've been there. I know what you feel like. And I want to encourage you to continue.
Well, that's one of the things with the Writers and Publishers Network. We're trying to build the community to support, to give you resources, to point you in the right direction, because nobody knows everything. And most of us come to writing as not our first job, okay? And in, or even our career through most of our lives. But if we, especially if you start writing after age 50 and you get going on it and it's like, which way do I go? And you get confused, and it's trying to uplift people. And I've started reading that book, Hope in the Mail. And I do see what you're saying, because if you tell other people that this will work, there's a woman I've been working with since 2010 who finally got a deal. You know, she didn't give up. She believed in her book. She took criticism and rewrote parts of it. But she finally got her deal, and she is the happiest person around. You know, there's like getting that first check, getting that contract, even just holding your first book in your hands. It's quite exciting.
So it's like my philosophy on it about putting hope in the mail. It's like you put yourself out there, you create the possibility that someone can say yes to you today. So that's the whole concept behind the expression hope in the mail. But also kind of what got me through my 10 years of rejection was thinking, because I had put hope in the mail, that today could be the day. And you don't know that today's not the day, right? Because you have hope in the mail. And so today could be the day. And if it's not the day, the next day, today could be the day. And that can be the case every day until it is the day, if you don't give up.
Right. I think, and it's perseverance. A lot of people can't handle rejection. And this is not a business. I mean, your editors are going to be commenting on things. You're going to go through it. I was a journalist for a long time and did PR. So I had editors looking at everything I was doing. And so I got used to people wanting to change things or correct things, or I haven't got the right angle. I'm not offended by it, but many people are. And it's something you have to, as long as it's fitting in your vision of what your message and what your story and theme is, you need to be able to get past that, I think.
I think that revision is the most important part of, I mean, there's the story and there's the creation, but that's fun for the author. The revision is what's going to make it fun for someone else to read. And ironically, what I used to look at with, you know, in language arts classes as being the tediousness of all these little red marks all over my papers and needing to redo. Now I get that from my editor now, only it's over like 350 or 400 pages. But now I see it as a gift, because this is my chance to make my book the best it can be. And so I wind up revising my work many times before I send it to my editor. And then we go through a revision process, which is pretty extensive also. But I've changed the way I look at it. It is a gift.
I agree with you. I absolutely agree with you, because it improves what you're doing. And you want the best, and you're dealing with a professional who does this all the time too. They want the best also.
And sometimes they can see it better than you can, because you're so close to it. You're so emotionally invested in it. You cannot be objective about it. And so getting notes from an editor as painful, I've gotten a 15-page editorial letter from my editor while I had a full-time job and two little kids, and just trying to hold it all together. And there's 15 pages on the fifth Sammy Keys book. And I just buckled. I'm like, how on earth can I do all this stuff? but then it's just, you take it, you know, step by step, you take it a little at a time and you work through it. But it's that initial being bowled over by your editorial letter. It is no fun.
Right. It's no fun, but it's essential to the process.
Which I have is a why question. You have to change the way you think about it. This is why you have to change the way you think about it.
Absolutely.
It's a gift. Right. Thank you for this 15-page gift.
Look how large it is. What a great large gift. Have you had a series of editors over your career, or have you stuck with the same one?
Well, so after 10 years of rejection, this woman pulled me out of, you know, the proverbial slush pile. And so I feel like it's, and then I won the Edgar, and it's just like things happened good for me. But I just feel like I needed to dance with the one who brought me. So I feel like she and I have grown up in publishing, and I just love her. So we laugh a lot together, even after the 15 pages of, you know, we still laugh together. And, you know, we've grown into friends over the years.
But that's an important relationship to have. I think the editor is probably one of the most important relationships in the writing process.
Yeah, because they're the person that gets you. They're the person that bought your book. They're the person that saw your vision, even though it needed some tightening, you know, that vision. They're the ones that believe in the merit of your story to the degree that they are willing to put some money down for it. So yeah, they're your partner.
Mm-hmm. Now, I have a question. How long did it take you to be able to step away from work and just concentrate on writing full time and being a mother?
Yeah, there's that. Actually, it was something that was a decision that was made because we were moving about 20 miles north of where we had been living. And my kids were starting a new elementary school, and one of them was starting kindergarten. And there was no after-school care for my child in kindergarten and he would have to be bused to some other school somewhere. And I was just like, so I tried to do a teen teach at the school where I was teaching, and that hadn't been done before at that school, even though it was common practice elsewhere. And I just made a decision between my kid and my teaching career. And my husband said, you need to take a leap of faith with this writing, because I had won the Edgar, and that's not going to pay your bills. But between the commute, the daycare, all these things we added up, and what I was making as a teacher, it's like, okay, I'm going to take a leap of faith. So I did. And so after I was in the classroom for 15 years, but it was my little kindergartner that made me give up a career I absolutely loved, because I love the kids. I don't like the whole politics of education or the administration or any of that kind of garbage. I like the kids. And so I decided that I'm like the silent partner in the classroom, where I'm writing books that will help shape their lives. But I don't have to grade their papers anymore. So, and it's all worked out super well for me, but partly it was because I had a super supportive husband. And I also had the very powerful desire to protect my child.
Well, those are two fabulous reasons to be able to sort of walk off the ledge and see if you hit something or not. Yeah. Well, I want to, we've just zoomed through the time here. What I want to do is just let everyone know Wendolyn is going to be our keynote speaker at the 805 Writers Conference, November 5th and 6th in Ventura. And she's going to be talking more extensively about some of the things we've touched on today, especially about the writer's life and the hope you get it, the hope in the mail. I love that concept of what you mean by that. And I want to thank you, Wendolyn, for coming. And we'll see you in November.
I'm super looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to meeting people. I'm so glad we get to kind of see each other in real life again. So excited. I'm excited to meet everyone.
Very good. Well, we're excited to have you. So thank you.
Talking Book Publishing is brought to you by Writers and Publishers Network, a resource for writers and indie publishers at every level, and offers tools to be successful in their writing career. writersandpublishersnetwork.com. Don't miss our after-hours segment, Conversations with the Producer, a segment where our producer, Adana Moriarty, talks with our guests and lets the conversation mosey wherever it moseys to.